You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 188. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. We are talking August ads tonight, and what better topic for a show when we are in the desperate crunch of August fantasy baseball. Steve, I know we were talking offline. I'm grinding, clinging on to a playoff spot, but the trade deadline is coming out or is running as we speak. I think this has some trade deadline inspired names that we'll talk about, but in general, looking at guys, both pitchers and hitters, that are lightly rostered and could bring an impact when we all need it the most. So excited to get into it. It's going to be a very practical and relevant show for all of us. So can't wait, man. How's it going out there?
Yeah, it's good. It was shaping up to be like a pretty boring. I guess it's hindsight. It's not the case anymore, but not like we were just waiting for trades to happen. I think it was Cespedes Barbecue put out a tweet how like no trades had happened, and there's usually a few trades coming up the days prior to the deadline. But thank goodness we got a flurry of a bunch today. We have some trickling in now. I'm sure we may be lucky enough to quote unquote break some news as we do this on the deadline eve. That would be fun to maybe go off rundown and talk about a trade. But yeah, this is a trade deadline adjacent show. You know, all your news shows will break it down. The Fantasy Baseball Morning Roundup that we do such a good job on, we'll have all the news there. So that will be, you know, your direct source for actual news. We'll be talking about the actionable fantasy stuff for this, and more of just a sort of a waiver wire show. Guys that we have low roster percentages. Everyone on the show is pretty widely available. I think we did a good job of keeping it really, really widely available as far as the players that are out there. I know that sometimes we talk about guys that are, you know, maybe 50% on Yahoo that may be close to 100% at FBC or CBS or deeper leagues, but these guys should be available in most leagues. We are using Yahoo roster percentage, but they're really, really low. So guys that we talk about, you should be able to add. And I think sort of what inspired this topic was just going back and forth with you offline this week, just about how we're at the point where pretty much anyone's droppable, especially in head-to-head leagues where playoffs are coming up. Like if guys aren't hot, you can basically move on from anyone if you have playoff matchups coming up or need to make the playoffs or you just need to do desperate things to even just get at-bats, right? You may just look for whoever's hot. So I think we'll hit on some guys that are helpful and maybe that could swing some fortunes, you know, for those that are grinding to hold on to a playoff spot or make the playoffs.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. And last week we talked about the strength of schedule. So I think we're kind of in season as well for a few of these guys that have, that we know have favorable schedules down the home stretch. So we'll talk about that as well. But yeah, to your point, Steve, pretty low rostership. And this first one is just 7% rostered in Yahoo. Troy Melton for the Tigers, pitcher for the Tigers, who we've only seen two starts out of, and his prospects looked better, unfortunately, through the resource and injury. But then also they bring in Chris Paddock, who he himself looked good. We'll talk about him in a little bit. But Troy Melton had a very impressive outing against the Diamondbacks, 7 scoreless innings, 5 strikeouts, a 0.71 whip, and his minor league production this season across double A and triple A, 75 innings, a 2.99 ERA, and a 26%, not strikeout rate, a 26% K minus BB. So definitely a head turning minor league track record this year. And yeah, the pitcher looks pretty good, Steve. I think we have to kind of wait and see for a team like the Tigers, if Melton's going to have a sure role in the rotation. But I think even though he had a rough outing against the Pirates, this last one combined with the minors, is pretty good. So what do we make of Troy Melton, the pitcher, and if you feel like there's actually some fantasy value for him August and the rest of the way?
I am very, very interested. This is a guy that, like, if you just do stat line scouting, to quote Foolish Baseball in that great series that he does, where he just looks at the numbers of guys that may not be on top prospect lists, like, this is someone that, if you do like a blind test and just look at the numbers, you'd want that this person, right? In 75 minor league innings, he has a 15% swing strike rate with a 32% K rate and a 6.4% walk rate this year. Last year, across 100 innings, he had a 14% swing strike rate with a 27% strikeout rate and a 7% walk rate. Like, really, really good stuff. He throws 97. I was going back and forth with someone offline, just a buddy of mine, about just prospect lists in general, how, like, looking back at them historically, they're not the most accurate thing. And I push back, like, it's hard to do. There's not room for every single prospect, right? Like, there's other things that go into it than just the numbers of actually watching the players. But then there's sometimes players like this that are just absolutely missed. Like, you know, I mean, on Fangraphs, he's a 70th ranked prospect, so that's pretty good, and the 5th ranked prospect for Detroit. So maybe this isn't the perfect example, but Troy Melton definitely did that. The hype coming in of like, okay, like, this is a guy that you should be stashing in like a minor spot, you know, maybe because he's 24 years old. But basically everything here looks really, really good. He throws a bunch of different pitches.
Great extension.
I don't know what's not to like. Like, what am I missing here? Sure, yeah, maybe there's some concern about the rotation spot, but I think that's been put to rest. Even with Paddock being added, Reese Olson's out for the year, or, you know, at least until maybe the playoffs, right?
Yeah, Gibson. If Gibson Long comes back, maybe like mid August, but I think what they're getting from Melton, like, Gibson Long wasn't, you know, like, taken over the world when he was getting a pretty long look. So I think they would stick with Melton if it looks more like it has.
I mean, the only thing is he did have just 100 innings last year, 92 innings the year before. He's already at 87. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if they want to go to like 140, like, that's what, another 60 innings? That should get you the rest of the way. And I don't think they would need him as a starter in the playoffs, right? Like, I think the Tigers would sort of lean on Scooble, Flaherty, and I guess, and Mize, right, in the rotation, as like the three starters. The only thing would be if they added another starter, then maybe Melton would be sort of pushed to the side. But other than that, like, this is almost like a must add for me. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I know Nick was super excited about him. Yeah.
I think he's going to be a name all offseason too, Steve, because like you said, when you look at the depth of the arsenal, the velocity, the extension, even the results in the minors, like, again, what's not to like? So, yeah, I don't know if you got anything else to add on Melton. I cut you off a little bit, but yeah, I'm in on the pitcher big picture as well.
So his next two starts this Sunday at Philadelphia, that's a little tough. But then it's at Detroit, and then I'll try and do...
Who are they playing against Detroit?
Oh, sorry. Melton is on Detroit, yeah. Angels, home versus the Angels. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that could be like a Taylor Ward-less Angels, although who knows what the Angels are doing. They're like trying to buy right now.
If he gets pummeled against Philly... and gets dropped even. But I mean, he's just 7% rostered, but I think that's, yeah.
And then I'll try and I'll pull up their schedule real quick. After the Phillies, it's the Angels. Then it would be he misses the White Sox, which is unfortunate. Although maybe he might not. Let me pull that up. He He goes on, this is great radio, on the 9th. Yeah, so no, he's not going to get the White Sox. But then it's the Twins, Royals, and then the Royals potentially again. Even further down could be the White Sox. So it looks like it could stretch. Be a juicy schedule after the Phillies here.
Yeah. Okay. So that is Troy Melton again. 7% seems wildly under rostered. So go change that if he's available in your leagues and you need some pitching help. Next up, Steve, we're talking about Ramon Laureano. Yes, the 31-year-old Ramon Laureano, who has quietly been putting up just excellent numbers, both in terms of underlying stuff and also in the past couple months, where in June he had a 950 or 945 OPS, in July an 862 OPS. He's not running like the glory days, but we look up and he's at 15 homers on the season across 82 games. So I know everybody kind of beats up on the Orioles in terms of a matchup, but offense wise, there's still plenty to like. I think, you know, Gunnar hasn't been first round, but he's been obviously above average. Jordan Westberg is back. He's raking and Laureano is hot. The underlying stats look really good. And Laureano is just 32% rostered. So he's one of the higher ones on tonight's show, but that's still pretty available in 12, even like 14, 15 team leagues. So talk to me about Laureano and what we think about the 31-year-old.
Yeah, this looks like vintage Ramon Laureano, like what we were excited about when he was coming up as a young guy in 2019, right? When he had 24 homers, 13 steals, and 123 games and was like a pretty high draft pick, right?
Yeah.
Like he was like, there was a lot of hype on him, and he never really lived up to it really since that. I know in this shortened season he was all right, but then it really kind of was either hurt or didn't really produce when he was on the field. And now it finally looks like he's healthy. And like you hinted at, all of the underlying numbers back up the 145 WRC plus, a 530 slug, right? It's the best strikeout rate of his career, 24.6%. The best barrel rate of his career, 12.6%. The best hard hit by far at 48.4%. So, like, this just looks like, you know, a legit hitter that's doing everything right and improved in all the areas that we sort of hoped for years ago with him. And I know that there is some speculation that he's going to get traded. He is on a one-year deal with the 2026 club option, though. So maybe he's not traded. But even with that, like that's a really attractive contract, right? Because it's a pretty easy deal to opt into if you're the team acquiring him. But that, maybe the Orioles don't trade him. I sort of looked at it as a guarantee before I saw that he had that option. But I mean, it. Again, you know, like you said, that's not the worst thing in the world if he stays there. The offense is good. The ballpark is good. It's not amazing for righties like he is, but he's still, you know, getting enough power as is. And it's warm for the rest of August and most of September in Baltimore, too. So it'll be a great place to hit. If he is traded, I don't think he's a platoon risk either because he's hitting righties better than lefties this year. He has more home runs versus righties. Numbers are much better right on right this year. I know that there was points in time where he did look like a small side platoon player, and that's kind of what played into limiting some of his game totals and plate appearances, even when he was healthy across the last few seasons, right? So I think that this is just a hitter that's widely available that really shouldn't be, and maybe it's just sort of because there's some fatigue with the name and the player of someone that hasn't really done this and is sort of breaking out or re-breaking out at age 30. But it looks legit. And if you need power, like you were saying off air, like about your Brian Reynolds decision, like give me Ramon Laureano or Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's already scooped up in my league. But yeah, I think it's a great point that if you're waiting on the guy to come around who you've been waiting on all year, you ride the hot hand, especially when the underlying metrics support it. So yeah, I think Laureano's a great one. Moving right along, Steve, we don't have to dwell as long on Mike Soroka, because any listeners who have been with us the past month, there's been a couple shows that we've talked about Soroka, but overall it was a kind of a medium interest just because he had been making some tweaks. I know he had a better June than July in terms of swing and miss stuff and strikeout numbers, but overall still serviceable. And as of like a half hour ago, got dealt to the Chicago Cubs. So he's back in Chicago for the National League this time. And the Cubs obviously are a better run environment in terms of win support than Washington. And then beyond that, last week we talked about how the Cubs have one of the best strength of schedules the rest of the way in. So I think some of those things, as a manager who has Soroka and he's coming off a lackluster start where he only went like 3 2/3 or something against the Astros, like this is very much a Toby, right? But when you put a Toby who's made some tweaks, and there were some reasons to believe him going to the Cubs is a value bump. So I just wanted to chuck him on real quick because Soroka as well is, you know, pretty lowly rostered, right? So he is 11% rostered. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we'll see. I mean, I guess it's still a question mark on if he would be in the rotation versus the bullpen.
No, he should be in a rotation, right? That's like what they I had thought. Ben Brown to have a spot start. I know Colin Ray has been pretty good. But they still have Cade Horton. Like the Cubs still need another starter. Like it's Matthew Boyd, Shota Imanaga, then Ray, Horton, and Ben Brown. Soroka should slot in there and take a spot there for sure. And we hinted at it last week, right? Like the Cubs have gotten a lot out of Matthew Boyd. They've gotten a lot out of Colin Ray. You know, they've done well, like sort of off the scrap heap. And I think Soroka is sort of on that pile, but has, you know, more talent than most on that pile.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, we talked about how his WHIP doesn't match up with his ERA. There's, you know, the game log scouting of, you know, some 11, 10 strikeout games. Really interested, and I know that it doesn't pop as like a park to pitch well in, but hey, on days where the wind's blowing in, you know, it plays as a really big, a really good pitcher's park, or blowing out, or sorry, blowing in. It plays as a really good pitcher park, and the Cubs have gotten a lot out of these guys, so I'm excited, and I feel like Soroka's a guy that we've talked about all year, sort of waiting for it to happen, and maybe this change of scenery will allow for it to happen. I do hope that there's like an announcement that yes, they plan to start him, just because there is that possibility that maybe they had the idea of pitching him out of the bullpen like he did with the White Sox last year, and it's such a success. But I would be shocked if that's the case, just because the Cubs are so desperate for starters.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know timing wise how it would shake out, but I believe he would be lined up to either get the Orioles in Chicago or the Reds next Monday in Chicago, which is obviously better than in Cincinnati. So next week that would line him up for a two start week where it would be Reds. And then after that, I think it would be. Okay. So then it's at Toronto. So that's not as good. I mean, I know they were on a bit of a skid there for like a few games, but that's still not a great lineup, but I think you'd take the Reds one. If it is the Orioles this Sunday, then it would line up to be in St. Louis, which would be much nicer. Yeah, but rest of the way, I mean, they got a series against the Pirates. They're at the Angels, so there's some decent matchups there for Soroka. So, that's our first batch here: Troy Melton, Ramon Laureano, and Mike Soroka. We're gonna get into another pitcher, just 3% rostered. But we got to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, JT Ginn. I feel like we like the relief pitcher reclamation type of or conversion guys. And here's another reliever turned starter. And he's been in the A's rotation that has brought him a couple interesting outings and had a really good outing on Sunday against the Astros, six innings scoreless, just four strikeouts, but I thought 10 whiffs on 77 pitches was encouraging. And honestly, there's plenty that's encouraging with JT Ginn when you start looking under the hood. So talk to me about your guy here. I think this is one that is available in almost any league. And should we be interested in adding him down the stretch?
I think so. Another guy that should have some good opportunity in what is not a great place to pitch. But, hey, you'll have to take what you can get at this point of the year. I think there'll be even more opportunity because the Athletics should trade Jeffrey Springs. They will probably try to trade Luis Severino, who is basically asked out since the second of signing that contract with how much he's complained about pitching in that ballpark, but with how poorly he's been, I don't know if anyone's going to want him. So JT Ginn should have a rotation spot from here on in, and I don't see why Oakland wouldn't give him that extended run. There's a lot to like. It's a 21 K minus BB rate. And you know, 3.89 ERA has come with an elevated BABIP of 295, though he's ran pretty high BABIPs basically at every single stop. That's pretty interesting. I wonder why that's the case, especially when he's ran really good ground ball rates too. All his minor league careers. It's really, really crazy. Another unlucky thing is that he's got a 24.3% homer to fly ball rate. I understand the ballpark in Sacramento is going to inflate that, but I don't know. By that much, that shouldn't be that there should be some positive regression there, right?
Yeah.
And if you would pair that with what's, you know, a good strikeout rate, a good walk rate, I know a lot of that has come in the bullpen, but it still looks like he has the stuff to be a successful starter. I think sort of in this Will Warren, Michael King, Clark Schmidt sort of way. I know he came from the Mets, not the Yankees, when he went over to Oakland, but he's got the sinker that he throws 94 miles an hour. He's got a cutter that he's added that's sort of unlocked, I guess, his breakout this year, and has a good slider that gets a good amount of whiffs. So it looks like that cutter addition has, you know, maybe given him you know, a way to play off that sinker. You know, and he also mixes in a changeup too against lefties to keep them honest. So you know, it's an intriguing profile that I think is worth monitoring, and definitely at least someone that you want for the road starts at the very least, for Oakland or for the Athletics there. I'm still going to call them Oakland.
Sure.
Until they move there. But yeah. You know, it's versus Arizona. That's not great. Then at Baltimore, also not the best, but,
I think there's,
you know, down the stretch, there should be some opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get the sense that I'm just trying to game log him real quick. Yeah. Other than, I mean, honestly, no, I think this is a valid take. I was just going to say with his, solid control with just a 5.5% walk rate and his 89th percentile ground ball rate, to me, that says even the bad ones won't be awful. Right. I mean, I know you mentioned that the, you know, the homer to fly ball has been unlucky and everything, but the worst thing, I'm just seeing Bailey Ober in my mind right now as I say this, the worst thing down the home stretch in your leagues is when you have one of those absolute blow-ups from a potential stream, or, you know, you want guys who can kind of round out the volume and not blow you up so that you're just counting on your aces to do what they do. And these guys are like the solidifiers, certainly in head-to-head. And I think JT Ginn is a good option for that. I do think these first couple matchups aren't ideal, but maybe tuck it away for that, you know, mid-August run where it starts getting a little bit easier with, you know, the Twins and some of those matchups. So, yeah,
if you look at his pitch moving profile, if you have a Savant page up, it's crazy, like, how it's basically like an east-west movement profile, right? Like the slider goes glove side horizontally, the sinker goes the other way, arm side. And that cutter has sort of given him at least a little bit more vertical movement. It's more of just a like it's kind of a straight cutter, but hey, maybe it works because everything else in his profile moves from side to side, right? Even like his changeup doesn't have that much drop. The slider doesn't have that much drop. It's more just horizontal movement. Same with the sinker. So interesting that that's been added to his profile, and maybe that can lead to some success as a starter. Hey, I mean, he's got 47 strikeouts and 44 innings and doesn't really walk that many guys. That should be bare minimum a streamer that is worth people's time.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, I think they're like, he is not one that you have to squint. Like last week, we're looking at Colin Ray and Cade Horton and stuff. Like JT Ginn, you can convince yourself pretty easily that it's a relatively high floor and there's some reason. I mean, like you said, over a strikeout per inning to be excited with what he's got. The extension is above average. I know it's not that like 7 feet that we like, but yeah, this is a guy who is, I don't know, maybe like that Jordan Montgomery mold where it's like,
yeah, that's a good comp. Yeah.
Like a 25% K rate and a low walk rate. But yeah, I think at just age 26, if nothing else, he's a name to keep watching because yeah, it looks like he's got the stuff to stick on the reliever turned starter. So yeah, that's JT Ginn at 3% rostered. At 20% rostered is Mr. Chris Paddock, who is on the move. He had his debut start with the Tigers and against the Diamondbacks looked really good. 6 innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 earned run, a 0.50 whip. That is now 3 out of his last 4 starts where Paddock has looked good. And I feel like there's so much fatigue with Paddock, and it's probably fair, Steve. Like we've talked about him probably since year one on WAF. I almost guarantee it. I think you were huge on him in like that 2019 or 2020 when we started the show. Uh-huh. And it seems like, you know, he's lived 10 lives in the majors, but still just 29 years old. And you have to remember that there are things to be excited about. I mean, the talking about extension, 7 feet of extension, is great at generating chase. His chase percent is super high. His walk rate is very much in check. And now he's put 3 out of 4 good outings together. We've seen the Tigers salvage Jack Flaherty when he looked lost. I know it's not the same pitcher. It's a much different pitcher. Paddock is not a wipeout slider type of guy. But there's enough for them to work with where I think it's interesting. I mean, that 94-mile-per-hour four-seamer plays up with his extension. And you know, he gets whiffs with 3 or 4 different pitches. I don't think he's going to be like a, 30 strikeout percent guy. But I also think when you're desperate this time of year, you're looking for anything that can kind of help out. And Paddock is at least worth the discussion. I don't know if I'm like sold. I also don't know if he should be rostered 13% more than Troy Melton. Mm-hmm. I think Melton has stuff that's more intriguing. But what do we make of Paddock here?
I cannot do it. I cannot do it. if you want to talk about like Bailey Oberscaries, this is a guy that could potentially leave you with an 8 earned run, 1.1 inning outing.
And he has first outing of the year.
Yeah, he has this year too. I know that there's a lot to like. He doesn't walk that many guys. He gets the chases. The changeup was so good that first year, and I think basically the league had just got a book on that, and he was never able to add anything like we hoped. Mm-hmm. And still sort of searching for that. I mean, it's by results it's been a little bit better this year, but the underlying numbers, it's the worst K rate of his career, the worst worst swing strike rate, worst CSW. Like, there's not much that makes me think, okay, other than hoping it's a good matchup and you get one of the good Chris Paddock starts, that it's rosterable on anything more shallow than like a 15-team league.
Yeah, the one thing that on its surface was discouraging is I saw that in his start tonight, he threw the slider less and the curveball more. And you go and look at it and you're like, but the slider is a better pitch by batting average and whiffs. That said, like, I think, again, if you wanted to squint, he throws both of those pitches in the same zone, but the movement profile is obviously much, much different. So that's where I was just kind of like, okay, at least, I guess if you're trying to hold on to anything, at least they're trying to tinker. Because you're not just going to do the exact same thing and expect different results. But, you know, again, the very simple logic of throw your better pitches more, he didn't follow that in this good outing tonight. So,
Who knows? There could be something else that the Tigers identified. I know that they've had some success. Like, you know, Flaherty obviously was more skilled and, you know, had that amazing run last year that they parlayed into trading to the Dodgers and also making the playoffs, which is pretty crazy. And then getting him back, right? The trifecta, like get a prospect, still make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, has that ever happened before in trade and then re-sign the guy? Pretty crazy, absurd. But
Not really the whisperers. Like when you look at Casey Mize, Matt Manning, like it's not like they've been, you know, a top five organization. No. I mean, obviously Skubal, but I don't think that's, you know, that's Tarek Skubal. So yeah, I think enough said on Paddock, but he is an option. And I guess monitor if it continues to be a different,
it's approach. It's a good ballpark, right? That's a good ball.
Yeah, that's a good, good
someone ball. That's had home run issues in the past too.
True.
To go to that ballpark is encouraging.
Okay. So there's JT Ginn, Chris Paddock. Next up, we got to go back to the well on Kyle Manzardo. I know we talked about him last week, Steve, because the Guardians have a very favorable schedule from here on in. And ever since the show, I know we've been texting. Who am I to take a victory lap too often? But we're in August pretty much. Yeah. And after that show, it was like Yainer Diaz, Manzardo. I know we were texting about a bunch of names, Edmund, that are just hitting homers like crazy. And Manzardo's now on a 9-game hitting streak where he's got 3 homers, 10 RBIs. And he had a couple homers right before that too. So guy's red hot at just 11% rostered in Yahoo. Looking month over month, his chase, his swing and miss is far and away the lowest in July, since it's been in any other month. So I think this is a good adjustment for Manzardo because he obviously set the world on fire in like April and then, you know, big time struggled with a slump and dealing with adjustments. But July has been a really good month for Manzardo, and we know they got an easy schedule the rest of the way in. So I feel like 11% is low. If you're in a points league, there's walks there as well. So yeah, just an interesting quick shout. I don't think we need to spend loads of time, but thoughts on Manzardo. You think this is a Brian Reynolds type of move?
He still does not play
they sat versus, him today
versus lefties. And the hard hit data is like not encouraging. Like you sort of like roll your eyes at the barrel rate and even the hard hit percentage. It's pretty middling. Barrel rate's pretty good at 12.4%, but 41% hard hit rate is a 41st percentile. The bat speed isn't great. There's still a decent amount of swing and miss, right? But nothing that's too concerning. And you kind of can easily gloss over Manzardo as sort of not intriguing. That being said, the pull air percentage is what is the reason why he's tapping into this game power, right? And has 18 homers and 338 plate appearances, a 24% pull air percentage. So that's, he's getting the most out of his barrels. When he's barreling up the ball, it's a home run. And if you look at his spray chart, like it's all to the pull side. Sure, this is just going to be a strong slide platoon, but you know, the Guardians will get the most out of him. They're an organization that does that. And I think that, you know, on a 600 plate appearance basis, he's a 30 homer bat. He may not get 600 plate appearances every year. But you know, he walks, he'll get on base, he'll have a good OBP. You know, that's why his OPS is close to 800, right? Despite the 237 average. And you know, the XBA backs it up. Like there's a lot of fly balls, right? It's a 26.8%, ground ball percentage, a 37% fly ball percentage. But the reason why his XBA is so low, it's a 12.4% pop up percentage. So this guy's like just trying to get under, pull the ball in the air. I think that's going to lead us to some really, really good hot streaks, right? Like we saw in the beginning of the year, like we saw now. So maybe there'll be another one over the next 2 months here, that Manzardo will have another, you know, five homer week or something like that, because when he's not popping the ball up and when he, you know, when his timing is right, he's going to hit a lot of barrels and he's going to hit them exactly where you need them to be home runs.
Yeah, and it looks like I'm just kind of peeking at the schedule. This might be a better... It looks like there's, you know, there's like a series against the White Sox. White Sox, Marlins, Braves is three series in a row starting at like August 10th. That might be a good time to kind of jump in. But yeah, it's a good point on the lefty splits. I know he has gotten like 50 at bats against lefties this year, but it hasn't looked good.
No.
There's homers there, but it's like a three true outcomes type of thing.
That's true. Yeah, he does have four homers versus lefties. That is true. And his OPS is actually the same versus lefties. It's 787 versus righties, 785 versus lefties.
Just hacking.
Just because he four of his nine hits have gone for homers. It's crazy. Seven of his nine hits have gone for extra bases. He has two doubles, a triple, four homers, and two singles. versus lefties.
So in April he had six home runs and he had nine hits that weren't home runs in April. And then in July he had five home runs and 13 hits that were not home runs. So yeah, that's you're kind of going for broke with Manzardo, but he is red hot at the moment, and the plate discipline, I do think that is a noteworthy change, that is getting better, even though there was a lot of room for it to get better. Mm-hmm. So that's Manzardo at 11%. Moving on to a trade deadline special here, Mr. Tommy Pham.
When has Tommy Pham not been like a potential acquisition at the trade deadline from like being on one of the worst teams? Yeah,
he's getting up there with the, I heard the CBS lads talking about Rich Hill and Edwin Jackson being tied for 14 different ball clubs. Pham's getting up there for the immaculate grid, but he should be on the move. It's kind of a, you know, foregone conclusion. Just 3% rostered. You know, this isn't going to be a league winner, but I think if you're desperate for somebody that can just lift the batting average, we know Tommy Pham can hit, and he usually gets hot this time of year. It feels like every single season we talk about it. And this season is no different. He's on a 9-game hitting streak. In the past month, he's hitting .380. And yeah, he was held out of the lineup tonight because they've the Pirates have all but said he is going to be dealt. So I guess you got to assess where he goes to see if there's everyday playing time. But I think it's just at least one throwing out and noting on here. Not sure if there's anything to add, Steve. I think we know who Tommy Pham is at this point.
All right. Can you name the 10 teams that Tommy Pham's been on?
Oh, man. Cardinals, Rays, Pirates is three. Were the Athletics in there?
No Athletics. No, that's one strike. We'll do three strikes.
Cincinnati Reds?
Yep. That's four.
White Sox?
That's five.
Got to be something out west. Padres?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Padres six.
Okay. Give me another hint here.
The other colored Sox.
I was going to say out east. Okay, yeah. Red Sox is seven.
Yeah.
Was there a Twins stint in there?
No, same division though.
Okay. Royals.
Royals. Yep. Two more. That's
eight. Man, fam. Good team or bad team? Historically.
Recently good. Recently good.
Orioles?
No. Dang. NL East and NL West.
Okay. NL West. Braves?
Nope. Mets and D-backs. 8 out of 10, pretty good. Mets, 8 out of 10, pretty okay. good. I mean, as a Cardinal guy, you rattle off a few of those more easily than I would have. That's yeah. for sure.
That's where he started. We had to live with that for a while, but okay. So that's fam. We got an actual Cardinal we're talking about, and that's our teaser because we got to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right. So Steve here to talk about Jordan Walker. It is. He's another guy that just feels like, you know, in 4 years he will be the Chris Paddock. Where we were so hyped, and it seems like we're kind of always built up to be let down, but you do got to take a step back. He's 23 years old, so we got to view any of these developments as a bigger assessment for a very tooled up profile. This past month has been Walker's best month of the season, an 835 OPS. Unfortunately, zero homers, but six doubles to go with that. He's another one that the swing and miss has improved drastically. It was in the 30 to 40% whiff rate all year, and it's down to 23% in July. So that's very encouraging. The hard hits are up, which is encouraging. But I was just dejected when I got to the batted ball type, and the ground ball rate was higher than it was all year in July, which has been kind of the nagging aspect of Jordan Walker's MLB career. Is he can't turn that corner with the high ground ball rate the way that, you know, Vlad and even Juan Soto at times, like you just, he's never climbing out of that. And that to me is always going to limit his real life and fantasy potential, but just 4% rostered. And I think the plate discipline and the hard hit and obviously hitting 310 for an entire month is notable. What do we think of Jordan Walker? Are you a little more optimistic than me? I feel like it's just kind of the Bermuda Triangle with him where it's up and down and exciting and lets you down. But what are you thinking here?
When I think of Jordan Walker, I think of that Grand Theft Auto meme, like, you know, the here we go again. It's just so, like, I understand why we continue to talk about him. Like, there's stuff that he does really, really well, right? Like he hits the ball extremely hard, you know, the max EVs are great, the raw tools are all there. It's, you know, 100th percentile bat speed, right? Like he's up there with Stanton and Cruz and all that with a 78 mile an hour bat speed. Same with the average exit velocity, same with the hard hit. He just cannot translate that into barrels and results and game power. And he's basically been trying to do that ever since 2023. And it just seems like he is a broken swing.
Yeah.
I think we've been talking about it for years that hopefully he gets away from the Cardinals and goes somewhere else and someone taps into it. Like, I understand why it's so intriguing and why we care, right? He's just 23 years old. Like, a lot of these guys wouldn't even be debuting yet,
right?
With and some of the minor league numbers he put up are just so impressive that you know, it was no wonder why he, you know, was at the majors at age 21 and found success relatively quickly. It's just, it's like I feel like this is something that he's probably heard a million times. Everyone's talked about it. It's like, all right, you know, you got to stop hitting the ball on the ground. How are we going to do this? Like, and if you look at like his swing stance and all of the where he stands in the box on the Savant, on the Baseball Savant leaderboards, and that new interactive tool, like it's just all over the map when you go between like the different time frames and what he's done. That said, it is the best bat speed of his career. Like, you know, there is some encouraging things there, and the fact that he does have a run for playing time. Who's hurt on the Cardinals that he's had the run that he's been playing consistently now every day over the last few weeks, basically since the All-Star break. I don't know.
Exactly, I should know, Steve, but yeah. I don't. I can't watch him with the local blackouts, and it's all come crashing down. Nootbaar.
Yeah, Nootbaar's out, so he's got some playing time, to work with. So I don't know.
Needs to be like a GoFundMe to get this guy to Driveline in the off season, like for how promising he is and how good the tools are and how consistent the issue is. I just can't believe he has not done like a full on swing coach thing. Or I don't know. I mean, he's made some adjustments like we did earlier this year, the whole side by side thing with his stance changing, and he was more athletic and crouched and all that good stuff. But I just wish between Arenado, Goldie, like there hasn't even been like flashes of the high fly ball rates. It just seems so constant. So yeah, I don't know. For the purposes of this show, I mean, you're talking about a guy who has three homers on the year in 68 games. So I don't think you're signing up for power. This is just if you are trusting the batting average that's showed up in the past month, you know, he's now getting opportunity and he's coming off a hot July, just 4% rostered. So I think it just kind of is what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, like if you go month by month with Walker on the batted ball, on the...
like fly ball rates?
No, on the... on the swing path metrics, there's just so many different. There's so many differences. Like, okay, just for comparison's sake, like I typed in Christian Walker's name, and Christian Walker and Jordan Walker both came up. So the intercept points, so the place where the bat meets the ball, as far as like, you know, where you're making contact on the plate. For Christian Walker, it's been 2.4, 2.7, 1.1, and 3.5, right? So pretty tight, a range of basically 1 inch, 1.5 inches of where he's making contact. Walker's been 9.4, 5.7, 8.5, and 5.4. Like he's just been all over the box, wow, right? Christian Walker's depth in box, so where he's standing, it's ranged from 27.8 to 29.3. as far as depth in the box. Christian Walker's has ranged from 23.2 to 25.4. So like he's just all over the place. And his distance off the plate is also changing from 28.8 inches off the plate to 32.3. Walker's has been, you know, basically within 1 inch from 26 to 27 inches off the plate, right? You know, even like his stance direction, he's gone from 13 degrees open to 36 degrees open. Christian Walker has been 16 to 17 degrees open the whole time. Like Walker is like changing his stance seemingly every month.
Yeah. This sounds like me golfing.
Honestly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's really what it sounds like. It sounds like a golfer lessons, trying to find his swing.
You got to get lessons. That's what they say when that happens.
Yeah.
So, okay, enough said on Walker. We're still pulling for you. Age 23. There's obviously a lot of talent there somewhere. So hopefully it's not a what if. He would be a Joe Adell type of
story. I could definitely see that happening. I could definitely see that happening, yeah.
Okay, next one is similarly kind of a hope and a prayer at just 3% rostered. But Brandon Marsh, 4 2-hit games in his last four starts, including back-to-back homers, hitting fifth and sixth in the Phillies lineup. I don't know about you, Steve, but this is a name that never gets me excited from in terms of an ad. But since May, I saw a fun tweet that he didn't have a single hit in April. Not one hit in April. But because of that, it's pulling all of the numbers down. Since May 1st, talking 3 months, he is hitting 295. So that is impressive. I think it's a little bit empty batting average, although fifth or sixth, I mean, I guess when you got some Phillies just clearing the bases off, you're not getting as many RBI chances, but it's a good lineup, and it's a great spot in that lineup when he's hitting fifth. And batting 300 for 3 months is nothing to sneeze at, but, you know, it's almost like a new Alec Bohm conundrum or something, because you're not going to get a ton of stuff. I mean, I feel like early on in, like, the Angel days, he was running a lot. Yeah, 19 steals last year, just 5 so far this year. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Marsh? You think there's any reason, you know, even like Marsh next to a Tommy Pham, if you're looking for batting average, like, what do you think about that?
It's pretty impressive that he's hitting 258 and didn't have a hit in April. How many at-bats was it in April?
Get it real quick. Okay, just 29 at-bats.
Okay, so still over 29 is a rough start. I mean, yeah, there's been times, I know we were a little harsh on the intro, but there's been times where Marsh has been a playable fantasy asset from like a strong side platoon perspective, right? I mean, last year, 16 homers, 19 steals, like that's definitely someone that I'm sure we talked ourselves into as like an OF 4 or 5, right, in NFBC leagues. You know, the strikeout rate was a bit high, and maybe you expected some batting average regression, and you were getting that in the beginning of the year, but he's cut his strikeout rate by 8 points this year. Kept the same walk rate. The hard hit rate is comparable. The barrel rate is down a little bit. That's probably why, you know, I honestly would probably trade some more of that swing and miss for a little bit more power, especially if he's not going to run. You know, I would take a 230 average if he was going to give another, you know, 10 homers and 10 steals the rest of the way. But you know, there's always been a good strong side platoon bat in here. My concern is that the Phillies, it seems like after they acquired Johan Duran today, their next priority is getting some outfield help, and I would imagine that would come at the expense of Brandon Marsh playing time.
Yeah, what are his I guess the struggles against the lefties is
Max Kepler's something. There like you know, they do have Johan Rojas, who's his platoon partner, who plays a really good center field. What is Marsh? And Marsh has been a fine center fielder, -1 outs above average. Whereas Rojas is, I know the bat doesn't play, but I think he's one of the, he's been 6 outs above average, one of the better center fielders defensively at least. So maybe they acquire, you know, I don't know. There is sort of a nice platoon there with Marsh and then Kepler too. I don't know.
And I doubt they're looking at a guy who's been hitting 300 for a few months and saying like, this is a huge problem or an area of focus, but I guess the platoon thing is still a factor. How often is he sitting?
If they get Robert, I guess that could potentially like limit his playing time, because then it becomes Max Kepler or Marsh in the platoon with Rojas. You know, maybe Robert could play a bit of the corner. And I know Kepler's, I think, banged up. I think he was scratched recently. So who knows? But, you know, Kepler definitely has more pop. But
yeah, he's set just a couple times.
It's a crowded depth chart, especially if they add.
Yeah, fair play. Okay, so then we're going to the bullpen here, Steve, which is honestly, for as much as I kind of dismiss bullpen, at least on this show, we don't talk about it.
We leave
ton.
It to the on the pen guys.
We do, exactly. It's a headache. A lot of it is, you know, wishful thinking and speculative moves, and you got to gamble before it even happens. This is kind of similar, but the trade deadline offers a ton of opportunity. So, yeah, I guess when you look at the landscape, what's jumping out at you? I mean, I know you talked about Duran going, which to me, I went straight out and looked at Griffin Jacks. Mm-hmm. I know he had like a rough outing tonight, but that is an elite setup man who he would be a phenomenal add if not for the fact that he might also get traded. Yeah. So like, talk to me about some of the names that you're seeing in the space, because I think you almost have to look at, okay, who was dealt and who's next in line. A lot of them look good. And then you have to do that again and yeah. say, if these guys get moved, who's next in line after them, right?
Griffin Jacks might get traded, right? I mean, he's arbitration eligible. I guess he's not a free agent until 2028, so maybe not. Griffin Jacks is interesting because like, he potentially could be like a sort of a Clay Holmes type. I think he's a conversion candidate. I know that there was some talk this offseason that maybe Jacks would be a good candidate to do that, but I don't know. He is like right now the must add because maybe the Twins sort of were going to decide to trade one of them, especially since Jacks has two more years of control and isn't a free agent until 2028. They should mm-hmm. keep him. So he's, you know, a priority add. And one because he's one of the two guys that actually got moved already. The other one was your boy from the Cardinals and Ryan Helsley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That would lead the door open for Phil Maton to close, who's been pretty good. But he is also another guy that could get traded. I'm going to look up his contract status right now. I think he is a free agent. Correct me if I'm wrong after this season. Yes, he is on a one-year, $2 million deal. So I would be shocked if he wasn't traded too.
Yeah.
Just because but that's such a cheap yeah. contract and he's been pitching well. So you yeah, have Jojo that, Romero there.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Jojo Romero is a good option. I mean, he's not like elite from a velocity yeah. standpoint, but he's been durable, reliable. He's gotten some kind of spot saves yeah. in the past. Yeah. I think Romero is a good option there in terms of just like a depth of rotation. He's not like the prototype closer with like, you know, an elite fastball or anything like that, but it's interesting.
And it's not going to be a lot of sale. Like these teams are selling for a reason, right? So there's not going to be opportunities, yeah. but hey, you're going to need whatever you can get. Yes. That said, Griffin Jacks, the priority ad. And then for me, I think the most talented guy that we're talking about is Randy Rodriguez on the Giants. Mm-hmm. Because Komeil Duval name was out there that the Giants are now looking to move him. They traded, who is the sidewinder? Tyler Rogers. Yeah. Tyler Rogers.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Both of them got traded. Whichever one's the Giant is a submarine guy. He also got traded. But yeah. Randy Rodriguez has a 36% strikeout rate, a 5.3% walk rate, throws 98. Like, this is a closer in waiting with a capital C. So I have Duval in one league, and I've added Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a saves-only league, so tomorrow if Duval doesn't get traded, I'll just drop Rodriguez and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But honestly, Rodriguez has been so good that he's like one of the few guys that are rosterable in save only leagues, just with how good he's been. Strikeout wise and ratio wise, right? A 1.2 ERA and a 0.84 whip. Crazy good numbers.
Yeah. And then I know the last one is David Bednar. I thought that's who you were going to say when
you said
your boy, because he was awful for me last year. And of course, this year he is like lights out. But he,
after a demotion, he was bad in the beginning of the year too. It was all
But he has been linked with a few clubs. I believe the Yankees as well.
Yeah.
Just to try to bolster. It seems like. Yeah, Northeast, they're loading up between the Mets, the Phillies. I think Dennis Santana is a good name, not as, you know, incredible on like swing and miss stuff as Rodriguez, but
he had the role when
Bednar was
down and did fine with it. He got six saves himself and was having a good year. And he has another year left. He's a free agent in 2027. so possible that he gets traded. I don't even know who would be the, mm-hmm. the third in line for the Pirates. I don't even know if you would want that, right?
Well, the name was Isaac Madsen.
Yeah,
And honestly, I think when I pulled him up, he actually looked interesting. Oh, no, I mean, the velo is okay.
But
I don't know. I mean, it's been good results and with the 2.13 ERA and a sub-1 whip, but it's also like for a reliever.
30% strikeout rate, though. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. So Isaac Madsen, so. Yeah, okay, so there are the relievers. Again, that is Dennis Santana if Bednar gets moved, Randy Rodriguez if Duvall gets moved, Griffin Jack's already a priority unless he himself gets moved, and Phil Matone on if or now that Helsley got moved, although he might go, and then it's JoJo Romero. So you can see why we don't do the bullpen because it's like Pepe Silvia with the yarn on the cork board.
Go listen to Rick Graham do a great job, who puts out those weekly closer and holes ranks and has the In the Pen podcast that comes out on Fridays, I believe, day after us.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, Steve, this was great, man. And hopefully those of you guys who joined us got some actionable stuff, some watch list stuff. But yeah, we'll be checking in every week, rest of the way through the season. And until then, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.